Okay, are you ready
Yes.
for the first
Yeah.
line of The Lottery by Shirley Jackson?
Let's do it.
The morning of June 27th was clear and sunny, with the fresh warmth of a full summer day. The flowers were blossoming profusely, and the grass was richly green. There's no tone setter, but everyone knows it's a horror book
Yeah.
because it gets scary.
Hey, how you doing, listeners? This is Gina Versa on this episode of the Waffle Press Movie Podcast, and today we're gonna talk we're gonna talk the movie Immaculate, which had came out the other week, but introducing a really cool guest. Met her at TIFF. She's a great actress, writer, and then also educator.
Yes, that makes me sound very cool.
Yeah, no, you are really cool. Welcome to the podcast, Erin Mick. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I have coffee with me, so like I'm awake.
Me too. Look at us go.
I know. Cheers.
The
But
nectar of the gods.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I can't like function without it, but I have it right now, so.
No, I mean, little known fact, the film industry actually runs on coffee. Coffee and dreams.
Yeah. But yeah, Aaron, can you tell us a little about yourself? We just kind of like we were at TIFF together and just kind of like just randomly met you when the lights turned off or something at the lighthouse or something. We do.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was sitting at the bar in TIFF. They have this little, the light box has this little bar thing. And you're right, I totally forgot about the lights out thing. God, what a weird time. What a weird time to be alive. But yeah, I met you and your friend. That was so, it was such a, we just had like a good chat. We chatted movies, chatted industry. You were like, oh, are you working on a film here? And I was like, no, I'm an interloper. I'm just here in industry. Yeah, I work at the University of Toronto. I'm a PhD candidate there, studying, as it happens, studying horror movies. So I guess I belong here in this conversation.
Of course.
And that's how I'm accredited to go to festivals occasionally if I feel like I should. But yeah, I usually joke that I'm a failing actor and a slightly less failing writer.
Okay.
Which I don't know, maybe I'll turn that into a self-fulfilling prophecy if I'm not careful. But yeah, my background's in acting. Love it. Love acting. Wink wink to anyone listening. And I'm a writer, mostly fiction, but of course screenwriting, of course, whatever else I need to. The occasional op-ed. It helps pay the bills, you know. That's me. I'm not that cool, but this is a cool podcast, so maybe I'll get some cool points from being on here.
Yeah, definitely. No, only cool people are invited on here. So.
Okay, well then good. I feel validated.
Oh, thanks. But yeah, no, yeah, I really kind of checked out some of your work on YouTube. You did like a Snapchat series, so that was really cool. It was like a
Oh
Snapchat horror. Yeah.
Oh, that was funny. Yeah, I was between degrees and I had some time off, so I went home. I'm from the prairies in Canada,
Oh, okay.
which is a really distinct and strange landscape, actually. I don't know. Have you been out there? Alberta?
I haven't, no. The only thing I know about Alberta is like Wolverine lives there in X-Men. That's where he's from.
Yeah, he's from, well, I think there's some debate in the fandom if he's actually from like the Northwest Territories or if he's from,
Oh.
or if he's from Alberta. But I
Okay.
don't know. I could be wrong. Any X-Men fans listening, don't like come after me if I'm wrong about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we do. We happily claim him. We happily claim Wolverine.
Okay,
Alberta
yeah.
is, it's like it's got a huge range of landscapes. That's why it does get used a lot in film and TV. Like Brokeback Mountain was filmed out there. Interstellar was filmed out there. It's
Oh,
a
that's
very
cool.
diverse landscape. But I'm from right by the US border, right above Montana.
Oh, cool.
So it's all prairie and river valleys, and it's very grand. So when I was at home, I was just the creative juices were really flowing. I was also younger and COVID hadn't happened yet, so I was less broken down the world.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, and I was like, well, Snapchat stories are really just, at the time, you could only film in 10-second clips. And I was like, well, that's really just a cut of, So I made these, it sounds so silly now, but at the time it was really fun. I made these like short films that kind of were experienced in real time on my Snapchat story. So I would like film them sort of in real time with friends and upload them, and then people would watch them as they unfolded, and they were often spooky. So we called it Snap Horror, and it was a really fun time. They seem so silly now on YouTube, but whatever, I learned a lot doing it, so who cares?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, for like filmmaking or like just making movies in general, like as long as you just do it, like, it's like leads to anything,
Yeah, well, exactly. And especially since it's not as if, okay, let me put it this way. Obviously, I just said a lot of stuff is filmed in Alberta, but if you're some girl like me, it's not as if I have access to like the world of Hollywood. Like, I mean, I can't imagine what it was like growing up in LA, and just having it all around you. It didn't even occur to me that film could be a career until I was like, I don't know, 25. And I'd been picking away at it sort of for fun for like my whole life, but I didn't know it could be a tenable career until I was well into my 20s. And in Canada, it's complicated. We have our granting system, which is obviously amazing, but it's also it has nuances. And I one thing that Canada can work towards addressing is there's not a lot of like upward mobility for filmmakers. It's sort of there's a lot of money, but the money comes in and then it's sort of like almost a perpetual, it's like treated almost like a perpetual hobby instead of as a career with sort of upward mobility and progression and bigger and bigger projects. So often people end up going to the States and then hanging out with you guys.
Oh
And
yeah, no,
yeah.
yeah, no, thank you. Yeah, it's yeah, it's like I don't know, it's like it's interesting here. Sorry, there's a clock in the background. No. It's
That's okay. I
nowhere.
mean, I can't hear
Oh,
it.
okay, you can't hear. Okay, never mind. Never mind. Yeah, so yeah, no, it's like it's interesting like here 'cause it's like yeah, I mean, I kind of grew up in like LA County, so like it was in LA, but it was like, like 20, 30 miles or so. Grew up in a town called Whittier, dumping some lore on you. But yeah, it's like oh wait, you probably know it, right? Whittier? Because it's by
No,
Loma.
I don't think so. I don't know much. I only know like my cousin lives in Orange County.
Oh, okay. It's
I
close to.
only know like LA and La Mirada.
Yeah,
That's
yeah.
pretty much
No, it's cool. Yeah. It's close to Orange County. But yeah, yeah, it's interesting because it's like, yeah, like film was like around, but it's not like, like well, we did have like on our street, they filmed like the Muppets here one time for the
Oh,
2010.
cool.
Yeah,
That's
so
awesome.
it's yeah, no, it's cool. But yeah, no, yeah, and then like at what point like did you see like Toronto kind of as like because that's a lot where the industry is that kind of like similar to like, say if like here it's like, LA is close, but if you live say in like Orange County, it's it's like around. Is that I was just curious, yeah.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure that Toronto ever really occurred to me until, truthfully, I lived on the East Coast for most of my 20s. I moved from the prairies right after high school. Decided I wanted to do naval engineering. I don't know where that
Okay.
came from. I
Yeah.
knew I liked ships and I was okay at math. So I got into this program at this small but excellent research university called Memorial University of Newfoundland. Went out there, pretty quickly realized, oh God, I do not want to be in engineering school right now. Dropped out after about a year and a half and switched, stayed at the university, but switched into the arts, which is where I should have been the whole time. And yeah, quickly finished a degree in history and philosophy and then got a master's out there. So when I moved to Toronto, it was actually kind of just because my master's was in history. At the same time, I was trying to do some kind of career in the arts. I didn't know what it would look like, but I was acting when I could, and I was writing, and kind of this weird like mishmash of things. We were talking about how you're sort of a like a multi-hyphenate, and you always have all these projects going on, and I think like that's the universal creative experience. So I was sort of mashing a life together in the arts, not really knowing where it was going to go. And then I found out that the University of Toronto has a doctorate program in cinema studies and film studies. So I called up the department and I asked, should I bother? Like, I'm not in film, I'm in history, but I have this background in philosophy and I have been working as an actor. And I think at that time I was already in the union, so it kind of made me look, kind of made me look serious in a way that I don't know if that was accurate, but it made me look like I knew what I was doing. And the person I was speaking with at the time, Dr. Brian Price, a brilliant scholar, he said, yeah, apply, just see what happens. So I applied there and nowhere else, which if you're listening to this and you're thinking of applying for grad school, don't do that. Apply to many places. But they let me in for some reason, and here I am. So Toronto, to answer your question, I realized that was sort of a roundabout way of answering
Yeah, no,
it, but,
no, of course.
I knew film existed in Toronto. I knew it was a center of film, but and Vancouver as well. They're sort of were bi-coastal in that way, similarly to there's like New York and LA, I guess would be the closest comparison in the States. But I don't know if I ever really thought like, I'm gonna live in Toronto.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like a dream I had. If anything, I wanted to live in New York, but obviously immigrating is complicated.
Yeah.
So, you know, the dream is still alive. But for now, Toronto will have to do, perhaps Vancouver after that.
Yeah.
And I will visit my family in the States whenever I can, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And you, I have to come visit you and see the Batman statue.
Oh yeah, I'd love to show you around LA with we got Batman statues and great theaters and I've lived here all my life, so you'll get the insider
I'll
tour.
Get the full meal deal. Well, I was down there in 2022 for a film and TV trade mission.
Ooh.
It was great. Got to meet with a couple of cool folks who work in the industry, and you know, some producers, some executives. It was a cool experience. I had a couple of scripts that were kind of, I don't know, in various states of finished or not,
yeah,
that I was pitching around. So I got a little bit of the LA experience, but yeah, it's a cool place. It's an odd place.
Yeah,
it's so big and spread out, and I think I was expecting, I don't know, living in a city like Toronto changes your brain chemistry. It's so crowded. And I don't mind it usually. I will say the last years in particular, 2020 to now, maybe the crowded part hasn't been as amazing.
Yeah.
But I typically don't mind crowds. And I was expecting LA to be so crowded. And then actually, because it's so spread out, despite its huge population, kind of was like, where is everybody?
Yeah. Yeah.
I liked it. It was cool.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely have to go again. Yeah, let me know.
I will.
Cool. Yeah, definitely have some cool LA adventures. Show you all the cool places.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Thanks. But yeah, the I guess just kind of going into it, because yeah, you know, you had your doctorate in like horror films. What's the what's like the first horror movie you remember watching? I'm just curious, just to
I was thinking about this today, and I was like, oh, there are so many different answers I could give to this question. The version of the story that I usually tell if I'm, like, I've done a couple of interviews recently about this. Usually, the answer I give is the English language version of The Grudge.
Oh, okay.
You know, the one with Sarah Michelle Gellar?
Yeah.
I love that movie. I watched it when I was, I think, 12 at a sleepover. Big mistake. Traumatized me. However, that's not the first horror movie I watched at all. Like, that's the most impactful and the most memorable, I think. But I do remember begging on my knees in the video store to rent The Blair Witch Project on VHS.
Oh, nice, yeah.
And she did, God bless her.
Mm-hmm.
But we got it home and we popped it in the machine. Anyone under the age of like 25 listening to this is gonna be like, what are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sure they might know. Like,
it's... No, they know. I think like the 90s are having a comeback, so I'm mostly back in my day, being a woman. No, but we popped it in the machine and we watched the first, I think, 15 minutes where they're doing the whole setup, you know, with the talking to the townspeople. And my mom was like, this is boring. We have to turn this off. I can't watch this.
Uh-huh.
And we turned it off, and then, and I was sad, obviously, because there's
Yeah.
so much cultural buzz about it, as I'm sure you remember. And then it was years later, I was babysitting, and I was watching, I don't know, satellite TV, flipping through the channels, and there was Blair Witch Project, and I missed the first part of it, so I kind of picked up right where my mom and I had left off years before, which felt very appropriate. And I watched the rest of it and loved it. But yeah, I mean, I think I flirted with horror films for most of my childhood, but was too scared. Like, I mean, I do think your brain chemistry needs to develop a certain amount before you can handle it. It depends on the person. So yeah.
Yeah,
What about
cool.
you? You've probably answered this question on the podcast before, but tell the listeners.
The first horror movie I remember watching, I think consciously, like, we made the choice to watch it. Like, I think at like with me and my cousin, he was like sleeping over. I think it was probably so there's like two, I remember Scream. So we watched Scream and it was kind of like I think that kind of like went over our heads.
Yeah, I mean, as it would. It
Yeah.
went over most people's heads when it came out, I think.
Yeah. So that's kind of a slasher, but like I think the first movie that like terrified me, that scared me was and I think it has a lot of horror film elements, but Signs.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
We watched that at the same sleepover that we watched, like at the same birthday party sleepover where I watched The Grudge. We watched Signs and
Oh.
Ghost Ship and The Ring and Ginger Snaps and
Every single bit.
Smorgasbord.
Yeah. But yeah, like when I was like 9 or 10, when the alien just like crosses the frame. Yeah, it was
So
like
good.
so fucking terrifying. I love that. I was like, I think, yeah, I was like 10, so I probably like put the covers over my head or something. 'Cause that was
It
like,
still gets me, man. Like, it still gets me. Signs, I love that movie. It's also deeply funny. I think something I've come to appreciate about M. Night Shyamalan is like how funny he is. He has an amazing sense of humor in all his movies. And sometimes it lands, maybe sometimes it doesn't, but I don't care. I love it. I love him.
Yeah, on this podcast we are M. Night defenders, so yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. We
Yeah.
love it. Okay, good. I'm glad.
Yeah,
We are
he's
M. Night
great.
Defenders on this podcast.
I love, Old was great. What was it? Glass, I love. I forgot what was the last. Cabin in the Woods. That was amazing.
Cabin in the Woods is incredible. I was just thinking about that movie recently, actually. Because there it's one of those movies that the this can we can talk about Immaculate, obviously,
Oh
right away. But
yeah. We'll get to it.
as we should, but I thought this is relevant for Immaculate, so I'm gonna file it away. But Cabin in the Woods is one of those movies where especially the production design is just jam-packed with details. I have never seen anything like it. That movie is insane for just the sheer amount of information in the background. Like, I mean, I remember there's this one frame where the sort of like, government bad guys are talking about which they're taking bets on which of the monsters is going to be chosen. And in the background, there's a huge whiteboard full of all the different sort of options available and all the bets that have been placed. And there, you could probably sit there and read that entire frame for days and not get all the details that are in that one frame. It's just jam-packed. Love that
Yeah,
movie.
no, it's good. It's good.
And
And then
Immaculate.
yeah, no, we'll segue into that in a second. But yeah, just one, just going over, I'm very curious, like, just because I did want to ask you the, like studying horror cinema, like, can you talk a little bit about that? Like any, like, because you talk about like the human psych, or I think we probably talked about a little, touched on it, just, what made us scared as kids, but is there anything you could say to that?
Oh boy. I mean, I'm a film scholar. I don't know if I have much valid to say about the human psyche, but I do think that horror has, and I'm not unique in this, I think horror has a lot to say about society, politics, how we relate to each other. So, sort of like the individual psyche, I don't know. I mean, I think one of the worst things that's happened to media literacy in the last few years is people reading into authorship too much. Whereby, like, do you know this movie Fresh? Mimi Cave directed it, I think.
I
It's
don't think
got
so.
Sebastian Stan and normal people, Daisy, what's her name?
Oh, Daisy Ridley?
No, yeah.
Huh.
Daisy Edgar Jones.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's got Sebastian Stan, Daisy Edgar Jones, and it's directed by Mimi Cave. And this movie, Fresh, is incredible. You should watch. I think it's on Hulu in the States, and I highly recommend it. It's hilarious. Anyway, when it came out, I remember people were just fiending on Twitter talking about how, oh, whoever wrote this is sick. Whoever wrote this is sick and needs to be hospitalized.
Okay.
I want to know who. I'm looking for the name of the writer, Lauren. I know her name is Lauren something. Anyway, I apologize, Lauren, if you happen to ever listen to this. I can't remember your last name, but
Yeah.
anyway, it was just insane. I've never seen anything like it. So, as for what horror can tell us about the human psyche, I don't know.
Okay.
But I do think it has much to reveal as a historical document about the times in which it was created. So, you know. And I'm not unique in saying this. People, horror scholars have been saying this since the 70s or earlier. I think it has a lot to say about, you know, our current fears. Sort of, it has a, I think horror has a sense of collective consciousness, or it probably wouldn't work. I don't know that you could scare an audience of people if you didn't have some, if you didn't have your finger on the pulse of what is scary for people in general, which requires, I think, a general sense, whether artists know they have it or not, of the zeitgeist, so to speak.
Yeah. It's
So,
almost
yeah, but and then as for how it scares, it's funny with kids, you know. I don't know. Some kids are just fearless and don't care about horror movies, but they really affected me when I was younger, which is probably why I love them so much now, I think, actually. I find them comforting now in a way. I used to have chronic nightmares, and one of the only things that was comforting was like turning on a horror movie. So I think, I don't know. I don't know. What do you think? You're allowed to talk on this podcast. It's yours.
No, exactly. Yeah, I'm just like gathering my thoughts. Yeah, no, I think it's just like it plugs into like some like, like deep, obviously like a deep fear, but like our anxiety of like, like anxieties of the day, because it's like I think of like War of the Worlds, even though
Yeah.
that's not like explicitly horror, that's more like a sci-fi film. But that movie is really drawing into like a lot of people's like collective anxiety over like, like terrorist attacks or like 9/11, because it's like the imagery they use, and like some of the like the way Steven Spielberg filmed it. Or whatever, it's really drawing into like some sort of like subconscious thing. So I think it's like it's kind of like designed to like, get that thing in the back of your brain that gets scared, it turns it on,
I think so. It sort of scratches at the, it scratches something at the back of your head, right? Where, and we always talk about like hair-raising horror. I really do think there's something like back here that's just horror, just, you know, I don't know. You're right. There's something there. There's something ancient in the back of our minds. And if a filmmaker can tap into it, whether it's with, I don't know, you know, it's all these formal elements, lighting, shadow, color, camera movement, editing, all this stuff. It's amazing. Movies are magic. They really
Yeah,
are.
I love it. No, I love it. And, I just love everything about like filmmaking and movies. It's great. One quick question before we segue into like Immaculate, which is a great horror film.
Love it.
As an actor, can you talk a little bit about kind of just being like a horror film? Like, how do you do like a horror scream? Like, I've like, like directed like actors and stuff. I'm just like curious. Yeah, just like have it on the record,
Have it on the record.
Yeah.
First of all, I don't know that I'm an authority on this.
Okay.
Like
Yeah.
something,
Just in your opinion.
but I do love, I love a good horror scream. I honestly think it just comes from the most guttural part of yourself. Sydney has some good horror screams in Immaculate. She's
She
like,
does.
I love it. She's like a little up and coming scream queen. I say little as if she isn't practically the same age as me.
Yeah,
But,
yeah.
yeah, she, I don't know, a good scream should be unique. It should probably go on for a few seconds too long. I love a scream that seems like it should stop and then doesn't. As for what it's like acting in a horror movie. I mean, first of all, I just love movies in general. Like, I any day on set, there's the, you know, this cliche, it's like
Yeah.
bad day on set is better than a good day anywhere else. Now, this is does not count if there's some egregious safety oversight or someone gets injured, obviously, which would never happen on set. But the sort of just general, like, busy, longish day, I think maybe the 18-hour days can stop eventually, guys. Like, what are we doing? But, you know, a longer day, a 10 or 12-hour day, even if it's hard, it is better than a good day anywhere else.
Yeah, tell me about it.
And horror is no exception. The only thing that I think I love about horror especially is just how, like, dirty, physically, like, dirty
Grimy.
you can get with, like,
Yeah.
the slime and the blood and the
Yeah.
big viscera and the, you know, soil.
Yeah.
I just love that. I don't know what it, there's something sick about actors, because I've heard so many of us say this. I just want to be filthy and covered in sticky grime. It's like, why?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it taps into something. It's play, right? I mean, I think it taps into that childlike center where it's like, I mean, because do you remember when you were a little kid and you would be like, let's pretend that we're aliens and we are mining for gold on the moon. Like, and there was no rules. You just make some, you just make some stuff up and go and play in the park, and you'd come home with scrapes and cuts, filthy, hungry, sweating, looking like you were in a war. I don't know. I think adulthood is in some sense a little bit of a construct, and acting is like a great excuse to just be a kid. Not that it isn't serious, not that you're not dealing with serious emotions, and not that it isn't art. It because it is. It's an art form, and it's also a business. So of course there's the professionalism and being on time and the seriousness of all that. But mostly, it's just a bunch of kids playing in the playground, as far as I can tell. And I love that. And horror is the most playgroundish of them all, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, it's very like yeah, it's very much like, physical, and then it's just like it really, I can imagine gets you in character if you're like in blood and like crawling in the scenes, 'cause like, yeah, makes you
Yeah,
there.
and you know what else it is? It's sometimes the people. It's not that there aren't, like, bad or mean people in horror, obviously. I think, like, they exist in every sector. But horror fans and people who want to make horror, I don't know. I find they're often just like teddy bears. And so a lot of the folks that I've worked with on, especially like really small stuff, really, I'm talking not even professional sets. I'm talking like little short films, like 48-hour challenges and stuff like this. Those are the people who you do actually want to be around. They're like just in it for in it 'cause they love it. Some of those people go on to make great movies for real. And I've seen it. I've seen friends go on to make like legit stuff. Because if that's what you're doing in your spare time, you're probably going to be good at it if you're doing it professionally as well. I mean, it's not a guarantee, but it seems to me that's a logical through line.
Definitely like a lot of passion involved, you know? Yeah.
How did you, hey, tell the listeners how you came into horror.
Oh yeah, sure. Like how I got into it, just like,
Yeah.
Well, it's just like I think when I was in college, like I did this zombie film, zombie movie. And it
Oh,
was
no
called
way. Where did you go to college?
I went to like Cal State Los Angeles. It was just
Oh,
like regular,
cool.
just regular like state college and stuff. But yeah, like I've been making movies since like high school, and then like we had like a friend that like owned a videography company, so we used like his equipment for like the
Oh.
productions, and we were like probably like 18, 19, just hiring like professional actors and stuff, and like it was like, and then we're like paying them and stuff, but it's just like we kind of we grasped like we were like went to like classes, and like our friend that owned the videography company, he like told us the basics, but it's stuff where I don't know, we're like 19, 20, like we don't know like what we knew like what a call sheet was, but it's like like scheduling and like stuff like that. It was like really learning like on the fly. But
That's the way to do it, though.
and we made this like zombie horror film. It's called Dead Memories. It's on YouTube. If you want to watch it, I'll send it to you.
No way. Yes, you have to send me that. I will watch that today.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, it's just like and we had like friend of a friend that could do like special effects, so we like just, you know, put this like basically the story was just like this like zombie kills his wife and he's going through the house and he's getting like flashbacks of his like life and everything. And you know, he gets confronted by his young son, and then, you know, was he like more human where he could like recognize like, that's someone from his like former life. And then I won't spoil the ending if you want to check it out, but yeah, it's
Yeah,
like
don't spoil it. I want to know. I'm gonna watch it. You're gonna send me the link.
yeah, I will, yeah. But yeah, like it was just basically, yeah, just kind of like, I did that, and then, went somewhere. It was on like some film festivals and things, and I just really enjoyed the genre. So even though kind of like done like other sort of, like more like science fiction or like like fan like fantasy stuff, like horror is like something I kind of like stick to and, excuse me, want to like, stay in, because it's just something in my brain that just really like attracts itself to that,
Yeah, I think that that's totally valid. I mean, it's a really unique genre. I always joke that horror film is like the opposite of toxic positivity. It presents a world where it's like, hey, sometimes bad stuff happens and it's not your fault. It's like because of a monster or a zombie or a zombie virus that gotcha and your life, or you know, there are always these sort of bigger forces at work. I should plant my flag. This is part of my dissertation, so I don't, you know, if anybody's listening, don't come after me, because this is a nascent thought. But I think that, and I'm not the first person to say it, to be fair, but I think that horror, it's like ancestor is something more like tragedy, like Greek tragedy, where it's this sort of forum in which people can work out qualms. Whatever that might mean, you know, work out issues and sadnesses and worries through art. And that has made it both tragedy and horror. It's made them actually controversial. Like I think Plato, like, very famously was like, theater's for idiots, tragedy's for fools. And nowadays you still get that same rhetoric about horror. You really do. You get like, it's trash, or people who watch it are sick, or it's not real art. And it people in
It's
the
like
academy who wanted to study it had to fight for a while to legitimize it as a subfield within film studies, actually. So
That's cool,
anyway,
yeah.
so you're part of the weird fun crowd.
Oh yeah, I'm glad to be a
We
part of
get it.
it. Yeah, a good member, members
Yeah,
together, so.
card-carrying member of the horror fandom.
Horror fandom's great, they have like great tastes and like, make good movies. Speaking of which,
Aha,
yeah,
good segue.
good segue, thank you. I've only been doing this for like a couple of years, Speaking of
It's more
which,
like you're a professional or something.
maybe, yeah. Especially unprofessional is what we go by, but speaking of which, great horror film Immaculate came out, the
Michael
other week.
Lohan.
Great horror film. What did you think? Because I what did you think? Because I love this. I love the kind of like the creepy vibes of this. It was really like it had such a weird like almost like you're watching it and you get like anxiety because it's like, something's gonna happen,
Oh man, I love this movie. I don't know that I expected to like it, and that I interrogated this for a little while because I was like, why did I go in expecting not to like this movie? I don't understand. I think it's partially because the sort of broad category of like Catholic adjacent horror hasn't often done it for me, whatever that means. It's not that I don't appreciate, it's not that I don't love The Exorcist. Of course I love The Exorcist. It's not that I don't love, you know, Rosemary's Baby, because obviously I do. I'm not an idiot. But I don't know, usually sort of takes on exploitation or exorcism movies, I like them and enjoy them, but they're not my thing. Like I sort of tend to lean more towards just the secular supernatural. But I also think there's a chance some of it was like internalized misogyny a little bit going in, because I To be very clear, I adore Sydney Sweeney. I do.
Yeah.
But I think some of the like bad rhetoric about her that's been going on in the public forum
Right.
was seeping into my brain a little. And I was thinking like, I don't know if she fits into this movie. And these weren't conscious thoughts. I wasn't like going in being like, I don't think Sydney Sweeney should play a nun. Obviously, that's ridiculous. But the fact that I was surprised when I liked it, I think is indicative that there was some kind of bias going on in my head when I went in. And I can imagine that it was partially influenced by sort of like, I mean, you've seen this, just people feel like it's okay to just go on the internet and talk ad nauseum about Sydney Sweeney and her body and her voice and her
Yeah.
persona.
Yeah.
Like, what is going on? Why are we picking apart this woman?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they know she's like she's really talented as well. I mean,
Lovely, by all accounts.
Like the performance, really speaks for itself. Yeah, it just yeah, it sucks like, people online are, gonna be, misogynistic, gonna be, like insulting, yeah.
Internet's gonna internet.
Yeah.
And so I was so pleasantly surprised. I was like holding pom-poms in the theater when she crushed it. She killed this role. She was so good in it. I think she's a perfect scream queen. She was also a deeply convincing nun, which I think is such a tongue-in-cheek. I think it's such a tongue-in-cheek jab at all the bad rhetoric about her that she was like, fine, F you, I'll play a nun then. And she did, and she killed it. And then it's, I mean, I don't want to spoil it for anyone listening, but there's obviously sacrilege involved, and she really dug her teeth in and really went for it. Her and I guess, did she is it true that she produced this film? I think that is.
I believe so, because she did like producing, I believe, on Anyone But You. So I would think,
Very cool.
yeah, I want to agree with
Well,
you.
she and Michael, dream team, because Voyeurs was also, you can like or not like Voyeurs and how it turned out, but I think the dream their previous movie together. But I think the dream of reviving a sort of a floundering genre, the erotic thriller, is a dream that I too have. Like, I love that genre, and there's such a beautiful moment for erotic thrillers in the 80s and 90s, and then they sort of petered out. And now we're in a very, I mean, we were talking earlier about how there's sort of like bad media literacy surrounding especially challenging genres like horror and challenging media. And I think it's partially because we're in a bit of a neo-puritanical resurgence at the moment, especially in North America. And I think like any filmmakers that are like, no, screw that, I'm gonna make an erotic thriller and then a nunsploitation horror movie.
That's awesome.
Anyone who has that on their in their plans, I love them. I adore them. I only wish, I dream of working with someone like Michael or Sydney. Like,
Or
what a
yeah, like
dream.
yeah, like the for like erotic thriller that some are really some really good movies like I watched Cronenberg's Crash for the first time.
It's incredible,
That's great.
Canadian.
Canada too. Yeah, proud proud Canadian. Yeah, I love Cronenberg.
We love him. Yeah, he's we love I saw this tweet that was it was no, it was a Letterboxd review for
Oh, okay.
Immaculate, and
Yeah.
but tweeted, because as you know, I'm resisting Letterboxd for
Yeah,
reasons I
it's
don't understand.
no, it's like Aaron, you need to go on Letterboxd for
You
sure.
need to get Letterboxd. I will eventually, and you'll be the first to know. But this one review killed me. It was like, I'm looking for it right now, but I'm not gonna be able to find it. So instead, I'm gonna quote it badly. It was like, movies for sickos are back, baby. Just sort of a tongue-in-cheek, like playing into this notion that these kinds of movies are for sickos or weirdos. And just embracing that and being like, okay, if they're gonna be labeled that way, let's just dig in. I
Just
love that.
embrace the, sicko label for like horror films,
Yeah, why not? I mean, the people who don't understand the genre are gonna use that terminology anyway, so it's okay to reclaim it, I think, as a funny moniker.
Exactly. I guess this movie would be really like, kind of like a sicko, because it's just like there's like some like scenes, and I guess we're gonna get into like full on spoilers where it's like, people get their like fingers cut off, or it's like there's like
Tongue.
their tongue, like I had to like I was looking, but then I looked away at a certain point because it's like I don't know, I get like
I looked away
screaming.
at the end where this is a big spoiler alert. So
Yeah.
if you're listening and you haven't seen it, stop and go see Immaculate in the theater. But yeah, the last sort of sequence when she's finally almost escaping the tunnel and then the priest slash biologist comes up behind her and
Yeah.
he's all Jasonified and he grabs her and he starts giving her like a on the fly C-section.
Yeah.
Oh, that got me. Like I so rarely get that sort of ugh, but I was in a morning. I went to a morning screening of it, which is an unhinged thing to do, but I did. On
No.
opening day, I was there,
Yeah.
11 in the morning. At the theater, there were like three other sickos in the theater with me, all so quiet and
Yeah.
respectful. Because also theater audiences lately have been weird. We got to talk about theater etiquette, you guys. What is going
Yeah.
on? But this was a perfect audience. But that scene, I physically just collapsed in on myself, and I was like, "Oh." And then yeah, that ending. Anyway, that I'm getting ahead of myself. But to the point about production design, I also we need to talk about this because I guess it was filmed on location in a whole bunch of different locations, because there wasn't sort of one hero convent building that they could find, and I guess they had to change a lot of their plans because they were shooting in and around Rome, and so actually, at certain times, I guess the Vatican sort of put the kibosh on some of their filming locations.
Oh, really? Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so I guess that whole opening sequence in the airport was supposed to happen at a train station instead to make it even more ambiguous about, because I wasn't even sure what time frame we were in for most of the movie until you see a cell phone later, and it's a chunky sort of 90s cell phone, but it's like a cell phone. And I was like, oh, we're like, this is modern. And Sydney hadn't She didn't really change her intonation, which is very modern. So I was like, it can't be like the 60s, but it's very ambiguous. And I guess they had even wanted it to be more ambiguous by having that opening interrogation in a train station, but the Vatican was like, no. So then I think they did manage to find sort of all the interiors, that beautiful open courtyard with the high walkway in the background in the garden. That was one location that I guess was a religious building at some point and they were allowed to use for some reason, which is great. But then everything else was sort of an amalgam. All the interiors, as we know in film, were not one location. It was all this sort of Frankenstein's monster of different locations.
Great production design too.
Incredible. I
Yeah,
cannot
this is
believe
awesome.
the production design, the detail in the background, how they managed to make it sort of out of time and out of place. I was talking to somebody recently and they brought up It Follows, David Robert Mitchell, 2014, I think that movie came out. I love that film. And in a similar, obviously, it's set in like contemporary Detroit, so it's a completely different movie, but in a similar way, created an ambiguous timeline where you have like Yara using a device that doesn't exist yet, but everything else is kind of dilapidated post-industrial Detroit. And then at the same time, like, you don't know what season it is because their clothes change in weird ways. Like in the opening scene, Jay is in the pool, but then later she's wearing an autumn coat. So
Really
in
creepy.
a similar way, I think Immaculate accomplished something like that. But I don't know. I need to see it again to decide how it actually managed it. But there is an out of place, out of time feeling to it. Did you find that?
No, I felt that too, because it's like it's going through like seasons as well, because it's like, she's pregnant with the Antichrist, whatever. Demon.
Yeah, or just a bad mutated Christ, it's hard to
Yeah,
say. But yeah.
exactly. And it's like, time's passing, but it's like, it's like it's Christmas, and then it's like, summer and everything, and then yeah, it just yeah, I noticed that too. It added to like, I don't know, just like the weird vibe of that. I loved your thing for It Follows though, because yeah, it's a little similar, yeah.
It has a similar feeling for me, and I also loved that movie when I first saw it a lot, and I still love it. And it's a centerpiece in my dissertation. I love that movie so much. But and this one, if it weren't so new, it probably would be as well. I don't know if I should just finish writing. I don't need to be adding more movies. But This movie also, it also is, I've just said that it's sort of out of place, out of time, but as a cultural object, we were talking earlier about how I think film, especially horror, is very indicative of the society in which it was created, which, you know, that's de there's real debate about that in the Academy, but if we read it that way, obviously the elephant in the room is something like the rolling back of Roe versus Wade, and then this movie is very much about bodily autonomy. All the critics have caught, you know, this is not an unusual thing for me to say. Every critic who's written about Immaculate so far has talked about this, but you're in the States, and that's where the sort of center of this conversation is happening. What did you make of it when you were watching the film? It's sort of very obvious political underpinnings.
Yeah, no, yeah, I really appreciated it because, it's like it's talking a lot about, because it's like for like Catholicism, yes, that's just like, the issue, just like abortion. And then, yeah, because I'm agnostic or like lapsed, and I don't certainly, follow that, or excuse me, believe in that. But yeah, it was very much like talking about like kind of the like almost like this weird like chastity thing that like like a lot of like religion has, or it's just like also to like this this deeply like conservative sort of like feeling that exists in this country, unfortunately. And almost like for like an issue like that where it's like almost like where it's like it's literally like a demon or like a creature that's gonna be like evil, but it's like it's almost like it's life is like like more important than like the main characters. And or for the villains,
Or indeed for this entire convent, this entire convent. For those who haven't seen the movie and for some reason you're still listening and enjoying all these spoilers, it takes place in like a convalescent home for nuns who are now senile or aged or even just injured, run by then other nuns and overseen by this sort of shady cabal of pseudo-religious priest type figures. And you know, that's a classic setup for like a neo-Catholic horror movie or like an exploitation type thing. This is like the Rosemary's Baby of it all. But it turns it on its head because the head priest, who's sort of the big bad guy, as you come to find out, is a, use the word lapsed, but he's like a lapsed scientist who like went back to Catholicism. And a sicko, and was rejected, we come to find out, by the scientific community, and then has discovered this alleged relic that supposedly has DNA from Christ on it. And they've been using this DNA to try to like resurrect Christ through like pseudoscience. It
Very like Cronenberg-y.
is, it is, it is. I wonder, actually, I wonder if Cronenberg's seen this movie. I
I
want him
hope
to see
so.
it.
I hope
I
so.
hope he likes it.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as I know, he lives in Toronto. If I ever see him, I'll ask him.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Tell me what he
But
feels.
it's like got all these nuanced conversations going on in terms of like anti-intellectualism on the one hand, where we are deeply suspicious of science right now, especially in the aftermath of something like COVID-19, where there's so much like bad anti-science
Yeah,
rhetoric
misinformation,
online
yeah.
and misinformation and genuine fear. Like, I don't want to paint everyone as if like they're just stupid for being
Yeah.
scared of science.
Yeah.
Like, partially a PR problem. Like, I don't think that the sciences in general, or like academia even in general, is very good at like relating to
Like regular, yeah.
the folks, like the like everyday folks, right? So it's partially a PR problem, but it has led to a deeply anti-intellectual moment. And so in this movie, you kind of get this like weird red, like double red herring, I think. I don't know what you thought of this, but you meet this priest. He's clearly kind of shady and weird.
Yeah, creepy, yeah.
The actor does a great job of towing that line where he's too charming and too friendly at the beginning. And you learn he used to be a biologist, and you're like, oh, maybe he is the good guy, and maybe this movie is gonna be critical of science. But then later you find out that it's actually just critical of zealotry in any form. Like, I think there's this really interesting way in which it has a conversation about like bad science. Like, I think this could be even a movie that's actually thinking about sort of like holistic charlatans who like sell like alternative treatments to cancer patients and like the bad science of it all, which is
Yeah,
really just
like pseudoscience.
zealotry in another form, right? It's just sort of like being overzealous about holistic so-called medicine, in quotation marks, is maybe not that far removed from being like a religious zealot. And so, I don't know, what did you think about, because there is a lot of different threads happening in the film. On the surface, it's like kind of a, and I use this word lovingly, it's kind of a trashy nunsploitation movie, but it's having complicated conversations. And I'm not making that up because I'm a scholar. I think it actually is.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, it's had like a lot of like, there was a lot of like undertones of like, things like that, like zealotry or like grifters, because it's like there's people that just like exploit like people's like beliefs for their own gains, and they don't even like believe in like the stuff that they're grifting off of, like someone's selling Bibles that is autographed by them, by a certain political figure that won't be named right now. Stuff like that. Yeah, don't want to mention that name.
We don't need a
Not
cease and desist
from God.
from
Yeah,
Superman himself.
he's like, dude, I didn't write this for, to be sold for like $70 online. It's just it's like gonna take him to court. It's gonna be his like 30th trial that month, Sorry, I'm on a roll. Yeah, it's
It. Don't be sorry. No, get on a roll.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, when you live in this country for so long, it helps to have humor to deal with stuff, because
Yes.
otherwise you go crazy. But
Yeah.
thank you.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like Canada's the bastion of sanity. Like, there's a lot of bad far right ideology springing up here. I'm from a province that's like pretty guilty of it, actually. Alberta's notoriously conservative leaning, and lots of bad, like, anti-trans, anti-bodily autonomy policies trying to come through the pipeline. So, to be honest, like, these conversations are global right now. And it's so funny to me that it's not as if there aren't incredibly thoughtful sort of I use this word only begrudgingly because I think everyone knows what it means, but I don't like that I'm using it, okay? But there are sort of like highbrow movies that think through these issues, and I want that, obviously. But I do think thinking them through on a pop culture level, like with a horror movie that's super accessible and super scary and doesn't come across as I mean, comes across as the opposite of holier than thou. Having those conversations injected into a movie like that is, it's amazing. This is basically what happened in the 70s after the studio system started to collapse in the six in the 50s and 60s, and then finally sort of had its death knell at the start of the 70s. You get all these auteurs springing up and coming out of film school or making independent films, and then having these incredibly rich conversations in actually kind of gritty, trashy, grindhouse kind of movies. And like everyone knows, you could talk about, I don't know, someone like Scorsese. He's a prestige filmmaker who's one of the most famous filmmakers arguably ever, and makes in like intelligent, thoughtful movies, obviously. But like, let's be honest, he also just like started making gangster films, which for a long time were not a that's not a respected genre. We respect it now, but it was not like, oh, I want to be an artist, and in order to be an artist, I'm gonna make gangster movies. Like, that's not how it worked. And so Scorsese is a friend to the genre, okay? He's a
He
genre
loves
filmmaker.
he loves horror too, because it's like he loved Ari Aster's, like he loves that
Praise Ari Aster
guy.
so highly. I saw that one sort of talk back they did. That must have been, where was that? That must have been in the States somewhere, some film school.
It was probably like he lives in New York, Scorsese, so it's probably like somewhere in New York.
Some forum or something, who knows? Yeah. Anyway, so he's a friend of the genre, and I really think we're having a, and I don't, maybe I'll be wrong, but I think we're in the midst of a sort of 70s resurgence, like another kind of film renaissance, where we'll get this really interesting collision of like trashy low art ideas and high art sort of rhetoric. And again, I use those terms high and low very begrudgingly, because I don't necessarily respect the terminology. I just don't have another, I don't have an alternative in English. And I think Immaculate is like a perfect, oh, what a perfect example. I just love it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. That really like sums up the movie like really well, because it's just, yeah, you know, it's like it's about something, like it's a horror movie and it's like scary, but like it's about something. And it's like I appreciate, you know, movies that like are about something, like have something to say, because it's like, you know, you have all these like weird people where they're just like, I don't want like movies to be political. And it's like art is like all political. Like it has, if it's not political, then it's not
Art
like
is
art.
always political.
Yeah.
I would argue that especially that actually art that tries not to be political, art that tries to be apolitical becomes the most political.
Yeah.
Because if you're being apolitical, all you're doing is serving whatever active oppression is happening at that time. It's the same as being a bystander. Like if you're trying to make apolitical art, I'm sorry, but you're being a bystander while you watch some kid get bullied. Like that's the same thing.
Yeah.
Probably. And
Yeah.
so
Yeah.
I think planting a flag and having a point of view, that's art is for, obviously. I totally agree with you.
Oh, thank you.
I do wonder about, okay, I have one and only one bone to pick with this movie. And it's not even with this movie. I think it's just with like the horror genre in general. And it's the issue of the tone setter at the beginning. This sort of setup, the initial setup where you have this one scene of this nun running away from the convent and you see her get like buried alive. The tone setter is a beloved artifact of horror, but I do think it can die. I think we can have more horror that just starts in medias res and gets going. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like the
I know
pro
that's an unpopular opinion.
No. It's like for like the latest Exorcist, I'm not sure if you saw it, the
Not
new.
yet.
Okay. Well, it's like fairly good, but it's like there's this whole like prologue that's like kind of like setting everything up, but it's like this prologue's like 10, 15 minutes, and I'm like, all right, you need to, it's not like bad. I'm like, all right, you need to like get going now, because this is like, you need to like start the movie, you know?
This pressure to do it. Like I remember one of these screenplays that I was sort of shopping in LA a couple years ago, which is now on a shelf indefinitely, which is okay. That's what they're for. Write them, you move on, someday maybe they get made. It's a horror movie set it where I grew up in the prairies
Oh,
in
cool.
Alberta. And I joke that it's like Garden State, but make it horror. It's
Yeah,
like a take
yeah.
on the homecoming
Okay.
trope.
Yeah.
Which has been done before 1,000 times, but you know, you try to, everything has, so you try to just do it differently. But I didn't really have much of a tone setter off the top because the whole thing is that I wanted it to feel more like a folk horror where you're just with this character who doesn't know what's going on, so you don't know what's going on, and then you find out later. And so I didn't have this prologue or this tone setter at the beginning. And one of the main comments I got from a producer that read it was like, you need a tone setter. And I was like, but do I? Like, but do I? And even if you do, I think there's different ways of doing it. Like, It Follows obviously has an incredible tone setter where you don't just know what's happening. It's like more ambiguous. I feel like the tone setter in Immaculate told us too much, and I feel like it was a some kind of production note.
Yeah, like it could have been like a studio note. Like, I mean, Neon's great, but you know, at the end of the day, like, yeah, you know, it's cool to play with like form and like structure, but like, you know, they are, you know, it is art, but it's like also like a product that, you know, they need to
Of course, we live in
make,
corporate world.
yeah, need to make money off of. So yeah, it could have been a studio note. It could have, like, this is pure speculation, but yeah, in terms of tone setters, because yeah, I've written like them into like my stuff. Like, it really depends on like the project, you know. Really depends, but it's not mandatory. You don't, yeah.
It's not. If you're listening to this, a tone setter's not mandatory, you guys. It's okay. You can do in medias res. You can just plop everyone down in the middle of it.
Yeah,
You know, I guess
exactly.
a famous example of this is like The Lottery by Shirley Jackson.
Oh,
Do you love this short story? It's incredible.
I haven't read it. I haven't read it, actually.
It
Gotta
literally just
send that
starts
to
in
me.
this. Let me wait, I have it. Wait,
Oh,
I
okay.
have a quote. Oh yes, right here. It literally starts just in the middle of everything. I'll read you the first line because I don't know if this is in the public domain or not, but this is from Shirley Jackson's The Lottery, okay? I don't have any rights to this. I'm not trying to pass it off as my own. Okay, here we go. It goes like this. The first line of The Lottery is, if I can find it.
Of course.
Find something to talk about while I shuffle.
Oh no, yeah, I'll just dead air, but yeah, no, I need to read more books. That's what I'm gonna say.
That's your
I need to I'm trying to like read more this year. It's doing better, but it's like trying to find like the free time to do that.
It's
Like
hard.
it's very hard. I'll do it like before bed or like when I wake up in the morning, but yeah, it's hard to be an adult.
It is hard to be an adult. And also, there are so many different things pulling your attention in every direction. Okay, are you ready
Yes.
for The First
Yeah.
Line of the Lottery by Shirley Jackson?
Let's do it.
The morning of June 27th was clear and sunny, with the fresh warmth of a full summer day. The flowers were blossoming profusely, and the grass was richly green. There's no tone setter, but everyone knows it's a horror book
Yeah.
because it gets scary. So something like, anyway, Michael Mohan, if for any reason you're ever listening to this, I adore your filmmaking, and this is not a criticism.
No. Yeah, exactly. It's
Because the
just
tone setter was beautifully shot, and it was scary as hell.
Yeah.
But the rest of the movie was also beautifully shot and scary as hell. And I feel like it would have been really interesting if we didn't know that the convent was bad right off the bat.
Yeah.
What if we didn't know that? Huh? What then?
Yeah. You know, yeah, it's just like, film is subjective too, so it's just like,
Totally. That's
yeah.
what's good about
Exactly, yeah. I agree. Yeah.
it. Ugh. Have I
And
talked too much?
no, you're good. This has been a great conversation. Yeah, I love having this discussion with you. But
Hey, can I ask you an unrelated question?
oh, sure.
Can the listeners know? They probably already know. Why is it called the Waffle Press Podcast?
Yeah, no, yeah, that's I feel like we've said this origin before on air, but yeah, just to if anyone's like listening just for the lore, explaining the lore is I believe that sorry, I co-host this with my friend Diego. It's not on this episode, but someone told him like a pun, because it's like you're doing press and they're like, you should call it like the
Oh.
Waffle Press. And then it was like, oh, we stuck with that name, and it's the Waffle Press Movie Podcast. So it was just
Oh
kind of
my
like a
gosh.
pun, like like Waffle Press Press. And yeah, so it's like, yeah, I don't know, yeah, we should put that in the description or something. But yeah,
What?
that's
No, leave it a mystery and
leave it a
then have the
mystery.
occasional guest ask you, like
Yeah.
me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Keep it
That's
mysterious.
hilarious.
Keep it
It's very
mysterious.
mysterious. Yeah. Waffles are one of my favorite foods.
Waffles are great. I love
So,
waffles.
they're so good.
Yeah, I don't say this much, so it's like, well, people listen now. I do love waffles, but like French toast is like this much better, so. I
Sacrilege!
know, yeah.
You're basically Sydney Sweeney smashing a baby right now,
A little
here.
bit. Yeah, so sacrilege for sure.
Yeah, I love waffles. I love them so much. I do like French toast. So waffles have the benefit of their little pockets that hold butter and syrup in them, you know, and so you get this little gusher moment of deliciousness.
Yeah, it makes me
French toast
very,
doesn't have
yeah, that's true. Yeah, making me very hungry right
that. Well, when you sent me the link to your when like
now.
a couple weeks ago, you sent me the link to the your podcast. And I was like, thanks, I'll check it out. And I listened to part of an episode, but the whole time I was just like, waffle press, waffle press, waffle press, waffle press. And then I made waffles because I was craving them
Oh,
after
yeah.
you sent me the link. So I was like,
Yeah.
I have to tell Gene that like he made me hungry.
Yeah. No, it's well, yeah, I'm glad I could turn more people onto waffles,
Yeah.
Waffles are
Yes.
good. Yeah.
Any final thoughts on Immaculate?
I think everyone should see it in a theater, 'cause it's like great to like have that communal experience. And yeah, just winding down here. Yeah, I thought it was like really, yeah, it's like a really solid horror, like you kind of like what you were saying, Aaron, where it's like a genre film, and genre's great, and this type of film isn't seen as much. I mean, I love like superhero movies or like blockbuster films, but yeah, we definitely need more movies like this for sure. Yeah.
It kind of has that indie grit, but it's high octane. There are moments where some camp seeps through, but as
Yeah.
it should.
Yeah, camp
As
is
it should.
great. Yeah, camp is cool.
Yeah. And Sydney Sweeney. She rocked my world in this movie.
Yeah.
More Sydney Sweeney in horror. More genre.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I hope she makes like four or five like more horror films like as a producer. Well,
I hope she works until she's 109 years old.
same, yeah. She'll be
She
like,
deserves it.
yeah, definitely. We'll keep watching. But yeah, just with that, you know, I guess, you know, kind of at the end here. But yeah, I just want to thank you, Aaron, for your time. This was a really, you know, really intelligent, cool conversation with you. You're a lovely guest. Be cool to have you
Thank
be.
you.
Yeah, of
Oh,
course.
my
Yeah.
pleasure. I feel so honored. I've been on the Waffle Press podcast. You should send me a button that I can wear.
Oh yeah, I could definitely try to like make some or something. Yeah. We used to have shirts, but I'm not sure where the shirts are, so.
Oh, the shirts are on the missing list.
Yeah, exactly.
See how it is? No, I'm just kidding. Well, I've used enough of your time.
Oh no, yeah. I mean, I feel like we could talk for like another hour, but yeah, do have to
We
like, you
could.
know. Yeah. You know.
I have to meet a friend. I like promised a friend I would meet them for a late lunch, so.
Oh yeah, no, of course. Yeah, I pressed for time. But where can people find you at? Just for you know, any like social media or anything you want to
Oh,
promote?
yes. The modern age. I'm on Instagram, Erin Ann underscore Mick. I don't have that many followers, and I mostly post my mediocre photography, but you're welcome to follow me. I'm on Twitter, but don't bother because I'm never on there.
Yeah.
And when I'm on there, I just get mad. And other than that, I think that's pretty much it. I mean, I'm on YouTube, but I don't post anything anymore.
Oh, okay.
I'm on IMDb. I'm not on Letterboxd yet.
Yeah. You will be. I'll try
But
to
every
like
day I inch closer.
I'll try to convert you to Letterboxd at some point, you know?
Yes, you can waffle press me in to getting Letterboxd.
I'll try. But yeah, no, great photography too. We'll say that with
Oh,
the
thanks. It's fine.
yeah.
It's fine. I just like it. It's fun, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But yeah, hope listeners please give you a follow because you know you're talented and you know you're really great. So yeah.
Oh, shucks, thanks.
You're
Oh,
welcome.
thank God for film festivals, or I'd never make any new friends.
Yeah, of course, of course. Yeah, film festivals are the base, are the best. Yeah, people should definitely go to those because you meet cool and interesting people like yourself.
You're so nice. I'm gonna be walking on a cloud when I leave this conversation.
Oh, no,
I'm
you're
so
welcome.
cool and interesting.
Yeah, only cool people on this podcast. But yeah, you could find me on Twitter and Instagram, G9892. The Waffle Press is on Twitter at The Waffle Press, on Instagram at The Waffle Press Podcast. We're on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, and YouTube. Like, subscribe. You know, if there's something you like, give it a like. If something you don't, you know, subscribe anyway. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. We've been professionally unprofessional.
Professionally unprofessional. Bye.
Bye.